Morning. Today's daf includes Kuf Chav Dal. We are on Kuf Chav Gimel. Yesterday, with a short amount of time, we fell behind. We're on Kuf Chav Gimel Amid Aleph. So we are starting in the Gemara. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. Tanan Hasam. We're going to start with the Mishnah and Kalim in the 28th parak of the 30 prakim of Masechta Kalim. We're going to be talking about Tumat Tahara for the entirety of today. Arbik Sugya, which really goes halfway into today's daf. So, on one hand, it's a justification for falling behind, but on the other hand, it's true. It's the beginning of a sugya that that goes halfway into today's daf, and that is the sugya of breaking kelim. Just as a klal gadol, just as a general rule when it comes to a kli. So if a kli is tameh, becomes tameh when it becomes a functional kli. Sorry. It's susceptible to tumah once it becomes a functional kli. Once it's a functional kli and it becomes tameh, so now the item as it's currently constituted now, obviously you can't cook. If you comes into contact with food, the food's going to become tameh. And with many of the details in terms of levels of tumah that I'm not going to go through right now. But in the meantime, however, how do you remove the tumah from a keli? So if it's a metal keli, so then you could just simply tovel in the mikvah and you're going to be fine. But if it's an earthenware keli, so then what do you do? So you can't tovel in the mikvah. Earthenware kelim do not become tohar by putting them in the mikvah, so you're mitar them by breaking them. But this idea of breaking a kli is not just limited to earthenware keli. It could be true by any other kelim. In other words, if you have an article of clothing, which is a kli, in halacha that's a kli, so it's mekabel tumah. So if I tore that article of clothing, so that's the breaking of that item, and as a result of that, it's going to become tahor. So there is a discussion elsewhere, not today's daf, that under certain circumstances, if you break a kli and then you repair it, so there is a discussion of whether or not the tumah yeshana, the old tumah, can come back and rebound. Mid-Araisa, obviously the answer is no, but mid-Rabbanan, is there a consideration? So that is a discussion that is had elsewhere, not in today's daf. In the meanwhile, in today's daf, we're going to be really focusing around this idea of what happens when we break a kli, and more specifically, how to break a kli. How to properly break a kli so that it loses its tumah. That's our discussion in the course of today's daf. What does that have to do back with the Mishnah? So you'll see. In other words, the Mishnah, which really is not talking much about the breaking of a kli, but our Mishnah is going to be part of the discussion, even though it's not really the main topic of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, which we did yesterday in Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, so that Mishnah, our Mishnah had to do with the idea of when I start flaying the animal, so the hide that is literally connected to the flesh of the animal, so that hide is a shomer, and that hide is going to be a conduit, a conductor of tumah. It's going to be machnas and motzias of tumah. Also, on top of that, because it's a shomer, it's also going to be mitzaref as well for tumas ochlin. That we learned in the first mission of the parak. And once the hide now has been flayed off, even though there are still connecting parts to the animal, the part that is now physically off the animal, no longer connected to the animal, so that part is no longer going to serve as a shomer. It's not even going to serve as a yad. And Rav said the entire separated portion of the flayed hide is not even going to serve as a yad as well. Because once the hide starts to come off, is even if I pull at the hide, I'm only pulling at the hide to get more hide off of it. I'm not pulling at the hide for the meat itself. And so therefore, according to Rav, the entire removed portion is not going to be a shomer, it's not going to be a yad, it's not going to be a conductor of tumah at all. Now, Rav Asi, by the way, in yesterday's daf disagreed. Rav Asi said that the tefach samuch, that one tefach that's right next to the connected part, that is going to serve as a yad, because when you are want to pull off the rest of the hide, you're going to be taking that particular tefach and pulling on that particular tefach. That's the opinion of Rav Asi, but Rav disagreed. Okay. And that's a quick recap of yesterday. But again, today's sugya is really going to be revolving around this idea of the breaking of kelim. Tanan Hasan, we start with the Mishnah and kelim in the 28th parak, Tal Sheitz Chabala Kara. So the Mishnah says like this: if I have a talus, which is tameh, and I start to tear it, kevin shenikra ruba shuv eino chibur, utahora. So once I get through the majority of that talus, so at that point in time, it is no longer considered connected, and it would be tahora. Simple pshat in the Mishnah is telling us that at what point in the tear are we looking at now a broken talus? So rov, as long as you cut through rov. Now, the Mishnah is not giving us a really clear indication in terms of how much is remaining in both pieces. Meaning, first of all, I still have some connection. In other words, I only tore through the majority of it. And what's on one side and what's on the other side, and how much is remaining? simple pshat in the Mishnah seems to indicate it doesn't really matter. Meaning as long as I tore it from what it once it was originally, and as long as I've torn through half of it, so it sounds like the simple pshat in the Mishnah is that it's going to be tahor, period. Take a look at Rashi over here. I'm not going to go through the Rashi inside. Rashi, first and foremost, compares our Gemara to a Gemara that we learned previously in the Masechta, makes distinctions between them. See Rashi over there. But the simple reading in Rashi is that it doesn't matter how much is remaining on both sides of the talus. As long as you tore through the majority of it, a tear that goes through the majority of it, it's going to be tar. That's a simple reading of Rashi. Okay.
You're talking about the length.
Yeah, correct.
So it could be at the edges. You have a talus and just do like 1 inch and you make it.
Sound again, so it's a simple pshat.
It doesn't make
sense. Right. It's a simple pshat, right.
I thought it was going to be in the middle.
Could be. Again, the Mishnah is really not particularly clear about where the tear is going to be. I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Rav Baravu, Lo Shana Le Batalas Tvulos Yom. So, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, so now the Amorayim come in. First, we have a statement by Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman quotes in the name of Rabbah Bar Avua that this Mishnah is going to be true, but only once the talus experienced Tful Yom. Let's explain. When a Kli becomes Tameh, so in order to go through a Tahara process, again, we're not talking about earthenware kalim right now, we're just simply talking about an article of clothing. So what you'll do is you'll do a two-step process, which is the general two-step process of Tahara. One, Tefillah B'Mikvah. You take the item and you tovel in the Mikvah. Two, Harav Shemesh. You wait until the sun sets. Only when you go through both steps of the process, then and only then does the item become Tahor. What is the status of the item between step one and step two? After Tefillah B'Mikvah, before Harav Shemesh. So as we discussed time and again throughout Shas, so it has some sort of residual Tumah. It is basically what in Halach is described as a Tvul Yom. Good. And it has some residual Tumah during that period of time. What the point of Rav Nachman is over here is as follows. Look, we have now torn the cloak, and the cloak becomes Tahor. That's the Mishnah in Kalim. On that, what Rav Nachman's saying is with the following qualifier. That's only if they already went through the Tefillah B'Mikvah, and now it's in a state of being what's called the Tvul Yom. Why are we limiting the Mishnah to that particular case? We don't have to wonder that much, because Rav Nachman goes on to explain. We continue in the Gemara. Demigu de lo chasala, because clearly over here, how concerned is he over this garment? He's ready to put it into a mikvah. Now, the mikvah creates tahara. The mikvah is not the cleanest of places. Both points are true. It creates tahara, but it's not the cleanest of places. And over here, he's ready to take his clothing, his article of clothing, and put it into the mikvah. Demigu de lo chas aleha, ve'at bala, lo chais aleha, v'kara la ruba. So you see, once he already shows that, look, I'm ready to do what it takes in order to get this item tahor. I'll show you how I know I'm ready. I actually toveled it in the mikvah. So now, even though we need Harav Shemesh, and by the way, that's all we need. We only need to wait until sunset in order to make it tahor. But there's another way to make it tahor, and that's, of course, by destroying it, by tearing it. But once I've already shown that I'm ready to do what it takes in order to make it tahor, so therefore when I tear it, I know for sure that I'm going to be tearing the majority of it. Well, what's the concern? The concern of the Gemara is, and concern of Rav Nachman is that if I tear it, well, the halacha demands I tear the majority of it, right? So I do a tear, I take a ballpark look at it, and it's like, it's okay, I got it. I got the majority. Did you carefully measure out that you tore the majority of it? That's good. It's good enough. So only under the circumstances when we know for sure that the person is ready to do what it takes in order to make it tahor, can we say for sure, for certain, that he tore a majority of it. Once he toveled in the mikvah, that already is an indication that he's ready to do what it takes. Now that he tears it, we can be rest assured that he tore the majority of it. Just 1 second. Avatal she'en tvolos yom, lo. However, if the talus itself hasn't experienced tvol yom, in other words, it's just a talus that's tame, and now you want to go through the tearing process, the destruction process. So So there's a concern, there's a rabbinic concern that he's going to tear, but he's not going to tear the majority of it. So you have nothing, meaning it's in the state of tama. In terms of the tearing of the majority of it, didn't do the job because he didn't tear the majority of it. Again, that's a concern that we have. And obviously he didn't tovel in the mikvah. So the only time that this Mishnah is going to be true is only while the talus is a tvul yom.
So according to Rav Nachman, whenever it says in the Torah,
Yechabes begodov. He has to go and tear it.
No. Of course, no.
Second way.
In other words, there's two ways to be metara kli. One is through tefillah b'mikvah with Harish Shemesh, and two is destruction. Destroying the item.
He's saying you need both.
No, that's not what he's saying. No. It's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that this method, this Mishnah in Kalim, that allows for the destruction of the talus through a tear of the majority, which is going to serve as a tahara, only works in a circumstance where he tovled in the mikvah. Only works in that circumstance. In other words, it should work by itself. Enachinami me'ikar adimin atorah. Of course it works by itself. But what the concern is, it's a rabbinic concern. Is that when he tears, he's not going to tear through the majority of it? How do I know for sure? How do the Chachamim know that he tore through the majority of it? Because he toveled in the mikvah. But in other words, it's a gzeirah derabbanan. May ikar hadin, tearing through the majority of it, is in fact going to be metaret.
It becomes tahara immediately
after the tearing. Correct. In other words, and obviously you won't have to wait the Harav Shemesh. But what it does do is that it significantly limits the entire idea of tearing, making it tahara immediately, meaning that part's true, but what have you gained? You've only gained, based on this gzeirah derabbanan, you've only gained some hours of tahara. Because anyway, after you tovel the mikvah, you need to simply wait till Harav Shemesh, and it would have been tahara anyway. So it's funny, when all said and done, what you've gained for yourself is very minimum amount. Amar Rava Shtei Tshuvas Bedavar. So Rabbah says, look, two responses over here. Chad Hashem Yamru, Tfilas Bas Yoma Ola. So first of all, let's talk about our casual observer. Our casual observer is going to see what happened. The guy toveled his clothing in the mikvah, and then a couple minutes later, he started using it for taharas. And people are going to say to themselves, wow, that's interesting. I thought there was this thing called Harav Shemesh. I guess I was wrong. Right? Okay. And so whenever you have a situation where there may be erroneous conclusions, so the Chachamim normally concerned about that. Here seemingly they're not concerned about that. Now, hopefully you've already figured out the counter-argument. Meaning the counter-argument to that is, you think there's going to be an erroneous conclusion? The guy, immediately after toveling in the mikvah, he tore the garment. So there is a tear in the garment. So even as a casual observer, so you should observe, yes, he's using it right away after the tefillah, but at the same time, there's a tear in the garment. That's going to be the counter-argument, and if we just wait a little bit in the Gemara is going to actually say that. Two, the Od. As we turn now to the topic of Chav Gimel Medveis. Ola Tzolv L'Rebbe L'Azim Rebbe Shem L'Egzer Demo L'Ossi L'Madri Rav Shnayim. And look, over here, the entire sugya over here is predicated on the fact that we're worried. We're worried that the Torah mandates that to destroy the garment, you have to tear through the majority of it. He and the Chachamim are concerned that instead of going through 51%, he's only going to tear 50%. That's your concern. So the Gemara says, let me give you another example in Halacha where there's a requirement of majority, and meanwhile there's no concern. By the Ola Sa'of, so what does the Torah demand? The Torah demands that you go through the majority of the pipes of the bird. Now, according to the Shita of Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, which we learned way earlier in this Masechta, back on Chaf Aleph, that's a long time ago. It's over 100 dapim ago. So we learned earlier in the Masechta that according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, so you only go through the majority of the neck of the bird, the animal. By neck, I mean the simanim of that bird. And you don't go beyond that. So over there, there's a halacha where rov is required. And why aren't the chachamim worried? Ligzer dimalo asil ma'abid rov shnayim. And once over there, there's a requirement of rov. So should the chachamim be concerned that maybe you didn't go through rov and you only went through half? And shouldn't there be a gzera there as well? So these are two points that are registered. So Amalei Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says to him, I'm going to address both points really succinctly. Number one. So Rav Yosef responds, Dekamar gzera shema yom tefilas bas yom ha'ola, kra mochiach aleha. So as far as the misperception of people, the misconception of people, hey, he just toveled the mikvah, and he's using it immediately? And is it? I don't understand, isn't there this Harav Shemesh? So the response to that is very simple. You're looking at a talus with a tear in the talus. I see the tear in the talus. That shows you that it's not just the tefillah in the mikvah, it's also the tear as well. And as far as why aren't the chachamim making a gzera in the base of Mikdash, legabe, the ola sa'of, which according to Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, you only have to cut the majority and not more than the majority. And why isn't there concern that maybe he, instead of going through the majority, the only one half? We're talking about the population of Kohanim. Kohanim is reason. And so we are less inclined to make a gzera for the Kohanim. Period. Tashma. So once again now, a discussion over here in the Gemara regarding the statement of Rav Nachman, that as far as the Mishnah is concerned, the Mishnah says that a tear of the majority of a garment is going to render a Torah by tearing the majority of it, you're destroying it. And Rav Nachman says, yeah, but there's a gzera derabanan. The gzera derabanan is that we're afraid that he didn't go through the majority. He only went through half. So this Mishnah is only talking about a beged tvul yom. That's Rav Nachman. The Gemara says, let's see, Tashma. So we turn back to our Mishnah. And this is where our Mishnah comes into the discussion. And that's why the Gemara brought the entire sugya over here, because of our Mishnah. We're flaying an animal, we're flaying it for shatiach, we are flaying it for a rug. So as we described in yesterday's daf, you're cutting the animal, you're making a lateral cut on the animal from the neck down to the bottom of its belly, and then what you're going to be doing is you're going to be peeling off the hide so that you're going to end up with some form of a rectangle. And kidei achiza, how much are we talking about where the flayed part of the animal coming off of the animal is still going to serve as a yad? That's only kidei achiza, that's only a handle, which as we pointed out is a tefach yesterday. Truth is, yesterday we pointed out it's really two tefachim that's doubled over, but that's it. Meaning after that point in time, any more of the hide which is flayed off the animal is not a shomer, it's not a yad, it's tahor. Hayaser michdei achiza tahor. So that means to say, I mean, it's a simple pshat in the Mishnah, that once you have more hide off of the animal, that's more than a kidei achiza, so it's going to be tahor. Now, the dividing line between tumah tahara regarding the separated portion of the flayed hide is really small, meaning it's kidei achiza versus anything greater than a kidei achiza. So the Gemara says, then why not make the gzera over here? If we're making a gzera regarding the tear of an article of clothing, and we're worried about half versus majority, 50-51% of a tear. So over here, if we're talking about hide being separated from the animal, kidei achiza is a yad for tuma, greater than a kidei achiza is no longer a yad for tuma, and that's the whole difference. So why not make a gzera here as well? So the Gemara suggests as follows. Iba tuma daraisa hachinami. So the Gemara says, look, if we're talking about a bona fide tuma daraisa, so then I say, shaykh to make a gzera. But hachimamai skin b'tuma darabanan. But over here, we're not talking about a tuma daraisa, we're only talking about a tuma darabanan. The Gemara says, is that true? Tainach tame b'tahara, tar b'tuma, tuma daraisa hi. Gemara says, look, if we're talking about the hide importing tuma from some external source into the animal itself, meaning the animal was shechted properly, the animal itself is not an avela. And over here, as far as the conduction of tuma, so that hide is going to be conducting the tuma from some external tuma into the animal. So okay, fine. So there are so many different scenarios in which it would be a tuma derabanan. And if you want to give that ukimta, I'm ready to entertain that ukimta. On the other hand, if we're talking about where the animal was not shechted, and that's clearly one of the cases in the Mishnah, where the animal did not undergo a proper shechita, so that means that that animal now is a nevela. As far as the hide is concerned, what kind of tumah is it conducting? It's conducting tumah d'oraisa. So under those circumstances, so now, clearly we're entertaining in our Mishnah, not just cases of tumah d'rabbanan, but also cases of tumah d'oraisa. And now you're telling me that I'm ready to make a gzera of a torn article of clothing, 50 versus 51%, over here, why don't we make a gzera as well? So, tuma daraisihi betreifa. So the Gemara says, well, maybe over here, as far as the animal's concerned, maybe the animal was shechted properly, but the animal was a treifa. So the Gemara says, okay, if an animal's a treifa and it's shechted properly, haven't we prevented the animal from being a nevela? It's one of the points that we made numerous times over the course of a mesechta. Treifa bas tumuyihi, and that's exactly the Gemara's next question. A treifa is not subject to tumah, assuming that we shechted the animal, and that's what we did over here. So the Gemara says, "In kedavu d'shmol damar avu d'shmol treifa sheshechta mitama b'mukdashim." Says the Gemara, that's almost always true, that a treifa animal that was shechted is not going to be a source of tumah. The shechting of a treifa has prevented tumah, and it prevented the animal from being an avela. However, if it's a karban that was a treifa, and even though it was shechted, and even though shechita normally prevents tuma, by hekdesh, there's still going to be a tuma de rabbanan by the hekdesh. And so we could give an ukimta. Granted, by the way, granted, it is a forced pshat in the Mishnah, but it's a dochek. But the Mishnah could be talking about the case in which it was a trefa of a karban that was shechted in the Beis HaMikdash. And even though, vis-a-vis you and I, and for all chulin, there is no tuma, the animal is not an avela, but vis-a-vis mukdashin, so the animal is going to give off a tuma de rabbanan, and that's why our Mishnah does not entertain a gzera de rabbanan of kedei achiza versus anything greater than a kedei achiza, because the tuma to begin with is only talking about tuma de rabbanan. Okay. Tashma. Rav Dusai ben Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Shimon Amar Hamavshi Bishratzim. Chibur Achiyavshit Es Kulo. So, we're going to go over a Tosefta, which is discussing now the flaying of the hide of a sheretz. Now, as we learned in yesterday's daf, some shratzim, so their hide is going to be like their basar. By other shratzim, their hide are not going to be like their basar, but like their basar. Over here, we're talking about the flaying of the hide off of a sheretz, and because it is such a tough connection between the hide and the sheretz, so it's going to be considered chibur ad shiyafshet es kulo until the entire hide is removed. You remember in yesterday's daf we talked about when flaying an animal, right? A kosher animal. So the real tough connection is between the hide and the chest. After you've gone over the chest, even though the rest of the hide is connected, but basically it's going to come off. We could see it coming off. I mean, you know, it's easy to envision the rest of it coming off. And so therefore we talked in yesterday's daf about how after you went through the chest, basically whatever's connected is no longer connected. Over here by Sheretz, because the connection is so tough on every part, so it's not going to be considered disconnected until it's actually disconnected. Now, what's the diuk? So clearly over here we're making a diuk, meaning there's a contrast built into this tosefta. This is true by a Sheretz. Now, if I went to another animal, so the halacha would certainly be different. So the Gemara now makes the following diuk. Habe gamal. Now, if we're talking about a camel, ainu chibur. So it's not going to be a chibur. So, and it would be considered disconnected immediately. Now, the Gemara is bothered by, and where's our gzera de rabbanan? Meaning, again, according to Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman is open to making a gzera de rabbanan and to make sure that a person tore instead of the majority of the garment, maybe he tore only half the garment. So Rav Nachman's talking about making a gzera. Over here, if there is going to be a difference halachically between a sheretz and a gamal, I don't understand. If we're talking about tuma daraisa, which ostensibly we are, shouldn't there be some sort of gzera derabanan? So the Gemara says, lo tema haba gamal in echibur, ela ema bo'or sha'al hatzavar eino chibur, v'rav yochman norihi. So the Gemara says, okay, what we could argue is the following, that, no, you're right. Vis-a-vis the hide of the camel in total. So we're going to say that it's no different than that of a sheretz. That the connection is considered a connection as long as it's physically attached. That's true by a sheretz, and it's going to be true by a camel as well. In other words, we are going to treat all hides the same. And again, because of our general precaution of making sure that we're not going to be lenient regarding the transmission of Tumat Tahara. However, what we are describing over here, the contrast over here is not to a camel in general, but rather to the neck of a camel. In other words, you have removed all the hide off of the animal, with exception to the neck. If the only thing left now is only its connection to the neck, we know that's going to come off. Rav Yochanan Menuri says, even though it's still attached halachically, it's no longer considered attached. And that could be the point of the Tosefta. So we're limiting the contrast to only the neck of the animal, and we're also setting up that brisa, that tosefta, to be going like the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. We're not done yet. I'm sorry, we are done. Period. Adkan. Sorry. I misspoke. Okay. So, our first comment on the Mishnah and Kalim. So again, Mishnah and Kalim, 28th Perek of Kalim, taught us about an article of clothing. You want to remove the tumah of it. So again, step one method is tefillah b'mikvah and harav shemesh. A second method is by destruction. How do you destroy it? You tear it till you get through the majority of it. Okay, and on that, we've spent now a good amount of time discussing the gzera of Rav Nachman, where Rav Nachman says that this idea that tearing through the majority of it is going to be mitarit, is only when you already are, you're already toveled in the mikvah. Because once we see that he's ready to do what it takes in order to be matariot by toveling in the mikvah, so we are now going to be assured that he has torn through the majority of it. If, however, he hasn't put into the mikvah, and all he's doing is just tearing it to destroy it, so there's the gzera de rabbanan that he may not go through the majority of it, he may only go through half of it. So as the gzera de rabbanan, Rav Nachman says, the garment is not going to be tahor, even if he tears the majority of it, if it hasn't gone to the mikvah. That is step one. Step two. Amar Rav Huna Mishum Rav Shimon Rabbi Yossi. We are on Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, halfway down the Amud, and another comment regarding this Mishnah in Kalim. Lo Shanu Elo Shalo Shir Ba Kedei Ma'afares. Aval Shir Ba Kedei Ma'afares Chibur. The Gemara now talks about, look, I tore through the majority of the garment. However, there's still significant attachment between the two pieces. Now, Kedei Ma'afares. Ma'afares is some sort of handkerchief. Now, in terms of linear distance, I don't know. The Gemara does not say. But basically, it was a common garment back in the day where everyone basically knew what its dimensions were. If you have connection between these two pieces that are Kedei Ma'afares, that's going to be considered a chibur. And consequently, even though you tore the garment, and even though you tore the majority of the garment, it's still not going to be tahor. It'll retain its tumah. Rashi over here writes, not yet. Okay. I'll get to Rashi in just a little bit. Sorry. So, I'm Reish Lakish Loshanu Ela Talas. Now, Reish Lakish says this is true as it relates to a talis. However, Ava or Chalim. But you see, when it comes to leather, meaning if I'm trying to tear leather in order to remove the toma, so the connection of leather is very strong. Leather, in general, is just a stronger material. And so, therefore, it's going to be any amount that's connecting the two is still going to be considered a connection. And Rav Yochanan says, no, it doesn't make a difference. Rav Yochanan Amar Afilu or Nami Lo Chalim. Now, he says that leather is not that strong. Now, again, you can't just simply say that what they're arguing about is the strength and the durability of leather, whether it's strong or whether it's not strong. What they must be arguing about over here is in terms of halachic definitions. Meaning, is leather halachically, meaning we know leather is stronger than a regular garment, but halachically does that make a difference? Reish Lakish says it does, and Rav Yochanan says it does not. Right, correct. Correct. That, in other words, the idea over here is that once you could stitch it back up together again, so therefore it is not going to be considered like we destroy the garment. Now, Ezra, Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish, the following question is posed based on another Mishnah in Kalim. Or Tamei Medras Chishev Alal L'Ritzuos V'Sandalim Kivin Shanasam Bo'izemol Tahor Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, we have a leather hide. And the leather hide is Tamei Medras. Tamei Medras meant that I have one of the people who are Tamei, where the Tumah is Yotzei Migufo, it leaves their body, like a Zav, a Zava, a Nida, and a Yoledes, where if they sit down on an item, in this case a leather couch, or just simply a leather mat, and they sit down on the item now is going to be Tameh. Two notable points regarding Tumas Medras that we make every single time. It's basic Yesodos. One is that the transmission of Tumah usually means that there is a drop in level of transmission from the item that's Tameh to the item that it touches. So if the item is an Avatumah, that which it touches is a Rishon L'Tumah under normal circumstances. Here by Tumas Medras, it is going to retain its same level of Tumah. The Azav himself obviously is an Avatumah. The Medras that he sits down on, the couch, the cushion that he sits down on, is too going to be an Avatumah. Point number two regarding transmission of Tumas Medras. There doesn't actually have to be physical contact between the item, between him and the item that he's sitting down on. Even if he sits down on ten mats, right? That's the Gemara's example. If he sits down on 10 mats, so each one of them, which is cushioning and shouldering his weight, is going to be tame with an avatama. Okay, those are two exceptional points regarding the transmission of Tumas Medras. I have a piece of hide subject to Tumas Medras. So chishav alav l'ritzuos v'sandalim kevin shenasam bo yizemol tahor divrei Rav Yehuda. So now basically, look, these leather hides, you know what I want to do? I want to cut it. I want to repurpose them as straps for my sandals. Okay, and I'm going to have to cut them. According to the sheet of Rav Yehuda, once you take your knife and you start cutting, already at that point in time, now it's tahor. Even though you haven't actually made the cut all the way through. The chachamim marmim ad shiyim matenu mechamish etfachim. So, and according to the chachamim, once you bring its dimensions to less than 5 by 5 tefachim, so then it is going to be tahor. Now, in terms of swatches of fabric, so there is a minimum dimension of fabrics that are going to be susceptible to tuma based on what the fabric is. For your typical cloth, it's 3 by 3 tefachim. For sackcloth, it's 4 by 4 tefachim. And for leather, it's 5 by 5 tefachim. And I guess it has to do with its functionality. The leather, obviously, being very thick, you need a bigger piece to work with in order to do something with it. Whatever the case is, that's the halacha. So 5 by 5 tefachim. So once you take this leather fabric and you cut it to less than 5 by 5, according to the chachamim, then and only then does it lose its tumah. So, and the Gemara now makes the comment based on this Mishnah and Kalim. Ki mamet le mi atahor. Now, once you've reduced it to less than 5 by 5, it's going to be tahor. Amai le mechalim. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. So why don't we say that it's really strong? Meaning, okay, I have diminished its dimensions to less than 5 by 5. But if there's anything connecting one piece to another piece, didn't we say that the connection of leather is strong? And assuming that we have not broken it up entirely, but just simply have cut it now to the point where I don't have 5 by 5 in one single piece of leather, so then it's going to be tahor. But if there's any connective tissue connecting one of the leathers to the other piece of the leather, so according to Reish Lakish, you said that's a strong connection. You said it doesn't lose its status of being a beged, or in this case, an or. So what do you do about that? So the Gemara says, Kikamri dechalim hechad dekatsari lei lehedja. So the Gemara says, okay, I'm talking about cutting it down the middle. And here, Phil, by the way, is where the Gemara, it's the first time the Gemara talks about where exactly we're making the cut. So I'm talking about cutting it down the middle, right? The katsari le Rashi over here says sari comes from the word sadak, meaning I'm splitting it in half. So over here, what we're talking about is basically we're going around the perimeter and we're cutting strips around the perimeter. So by doing so, so there, everyone would agree. I would agree, everyone would agree that at that point in time, whatever I cut off is not considered connected. Okay. So once again, now we're going to turn back to our Mishnah. We're flaying our animal. So once again, what did we learn in our Mishnah? That if we flay the animal and we start pulling off the hide, if the hide has only been pulled off a kedei achiza, it's a yad. Anything more than that, it's no longer a yad. Hayesim echdei achiza tahor. So once I pull off more than a kedei achiza, it's going to be tahor. Ve'amai le'machalim. Now the Gemara says, now I don't understand. We said, why if I pulled more than a kedei achiza off of the animal, where it's still attached to the rest of the hide of the animal, but because so much of it is pulled off, so it's no longer a yad, it's no longer serviceable. We're talking about leather, obviously. It's the hide of an animal. It's no longer serviceable. Sure it is. Meaning, didn't you, Reish Lakish, make the argument that leather is very strong? And so therefore, even though I have more than a kedei achiza, so let's say it's 5 tefachim of hide that's off the animal. Okay, but it's leather. And if I pick up the unconnected part, aren't I going to be picking up the animal? Shouldn't it still be serving as a yad? So Tirgama Rabavin Rishon Osanipo. So the Gemara says, well, what we're going to have to say is that, look, as it is coming off of the animal, and anything more than a kedei achiza, even though physically connected, halachically is viewed as now disconnected. Meaning by virtue of the fact that there is a new section of hide that is right next to the connected hide, so whatever is beyond that is considered halachically no longer connected. And so, you're right. I'm not arguing with whether leather and hide is strong or not strong. Obviously, we all agreed strong. But when you're flaying an animal, so the part that is a yad is only the part that is actually going to be held in terms of removing, again, according to Rav Asi, either the rest of the hide, or according to Rav, the actual animal itself. But anything beyond that is simply going to be considered disregarded.
The Gemara thought that it can reconnect with the flesh?
No, the Gemara did not think that for a moment. The Gemara is just simply wondering, why is it considered disconnected, even halachically, if it's strong, and if I can pull on any part of the flayed hide, and it will still be attached to the rest of the hide, so it should all be a yad. That's what that was the havimin of the Gemara, and the maskana of the Gemara is no. Once I have a new kedei achiza, the rest of it is considered halachically disconnected. Mesiv Rav Yosef, or Sha'alat Savar, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, Omer Eino Chibur. So the Gemara now turns once again today to the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri. You have flayed the majority of the animal. Whatever's remaining on the animal right now is only that part that which is connected to the neck. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says, let's not worry about it. It is halachically considered detached. Amai hachalim vikai. Again, the question's on Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish, you said that the connection of hide is really strong, and regardless of how much is disconnected, as long as the hides are connected, so as long as the leather's connected, that is still cause for attachment. So Amalei Abaye, Ema Seifa, V'chachamim Omrim Chibur. So the Gemara says, okay, look, I see Rav Yochanan ben Nuri being a kasha on Reish Lakish, but it happens to be that the Chachamim disagree. And the Chachamim say that when hide is still connected to the neck of the animal, that is considered a connection. As much as you're going to challenge Reish Lakish based on the opinion of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, you have the Chachamim who hold like him. And obviously, he's in good shape right now. The Chachamim hold like him. Ella Amar Abai B'Shomer Asur L'Natik Me'elav Kamiflegi Marsav Avishomer V'Marsav Elo Avishomer. So the Gemara says, you're right. That machlok between Rav Yochanan and the Chachamim have nothing to do with attachment and chibur and yad. The issue over there is as follows. We have now removed the hide of the entire animal with exception to the neck. That hide is going to come off. We know it's going to come off. It's a shomer ha'omed lenatek, right? Or let me quote the Gemara better. Shomer ha'asui lenatek. It is a shomer that is going to come off. Did that have the status of a shomer? The whole idea of shomer is that it's there to serve and protect. And once we know that it's basically no longer going to serve and protect, even though physically connected, but very, very, very easy prognostication tells us it's not going to be connected. So how do we view that halachically? That's a machlok between Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and the Chachamim, and it doesn't relate to our discussion at all. Continuing in the Gemara, Mesiv Reb Yirmiya, Tanur Shenitma, Ketzad Mitarin, Tanur Shenitma, Ketzad Mitarin Oso. I have an oven. Okay, back in the day, earthenware ovens, right, were first and foremost made out of earthenware. Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you everyone for coming. They're small and basically portable. They're kind of like our portable grills, but smaller than probably any one of our grills in our backyard, and made out of earthenware. And what you did is that when you wanted to use them, so you would put them down on the ground, and you would put a layer of plaster. And that layer of plaster, now weather goes both on the outside and on the inside, so I don't know, but it sounds like from the Rashi over here that it goes on both, outside and inside. And on top of that, we're also plastering it into the ground as well. In other words, that plaster is going to run into the ground. And so basically, although it is portable, but we're, to the best of our ability, we're going to try to cement it, literally cement it to the ground, so that now we have something which is pretty durable. And now our oven becomes tame. And now we want to be matar it. So again, it's earthenware, so there's only one option for tahara, and that is breaking it. Breaking it into two is not an option. Why not? Because breaking it into two means that I'm going to have a larger piece and a smaller piece. I know there's a possibility we could break it right down the middle, and it's going to be 50-50, and then it gets onto the discussion of Ef Shalot Samson or Ef Shalot Samson. All that's true. And by the way, the Gemara elsewhere entertains that. But for our purposes right now, let's say it's simple. If you break it into two, you're going to have a big piece and you're going to have a small piece. The big piece is still going to retain its status of a kli cheres. And so therefore, how do I break it to know for sure that there is not a piece with 50%? And the answer is very simple. Break it into three. That's the Mishnah in Kalim. And so, We have today our third Mishnah in Kelim. Okay, three Mishnayos. We're doing good today, huh? Whatever. As long as one of those pieces is not greater than 50%. Tanushinin Maketza Matarno. So Chokol Shlosha Vigarus Tefila. So the Mishnah tells us that you're going to break it into three pieces, and you're going to have to remove the plaster as well. Ad Shiyehe Ba'aretz. Remove all the plaster, even the part that goes into the ground. Good. Rabbi Meir Omer Enutzarech Lo Ligros Tefila V'Lo Ad Shiyehe Ba'aretz Ela Memata Mebifnim Me'Arba Tfachim. So And Rabbi Meir says that you don't have to remove all that plaster. Just remove the interior plaster, and even the interior plaster. Just go down four tefachim, and that's enough. Okay, period. And obviously, according to Rabbi Meir, you're also going to have to make the break of the Kli Cheres, but you're not going to have to remove all the plaster. Now, what do we got so far? So, ki memai lei. Yeah. So kimamaitle midalad mia tahor. So the Gemara says now, as long as I've taken the plaster and removed the top four tefachim of that plaster, it's going to be tahor. Now amai, and the Gemara is still on the attack on Reish Lakish. Because Reish Lakish made a comment of, well, you know when hides are connected, because the hides are so tough, so therefore that connection is going to be a strong connection. And Reish Lakish therefore made a distinction between a cloth, a fabric garment, where there, if as long as the connection is not that strong, it's not a kedem afaris, it's not considered a connection, as opposed to leather, any connection by leather is strong because it is halakhically valid, because leather is so strong. Here we're talking about a plaster connection. And the Gemara is basically saying, if you are ready to talk about a leather connection being strong, and therefore halakhically valid, over here we have a plaster connection, which the Gemara is assuming is, if not as strong, certainly stronger. And so therefore, halachically, that should be significant. And Reish Lakish, what do you have to say about that? So, Amai lema hachalim v'kai, Amai le rav aveima midrabanan, goresa tefila ashiye ba'aretz. So the Gemara says, okay, it's true. You can ask a question against Reish Lakish from the opinion of Rav Meir. But in the very same Mishnah you just quoted, there's also a sheet of the Chachamim. And the Chachamim said, do you know how you break an oven? By breaking it and removing all the plaster. So if anything, why not point to the sheet of the Chachamim and say that that's a wonderful raya for Reish Lakish? Elam Rava Hachi Kamar, Tanu Shenit Maketza Mitarno. So Rava says, here's how we're going to say pshat in the Mishnah. That if an oven becomes Tameh, and you want to be Mitarit, so Divrei Hakol Chokol Shoshi, divide to three pieces, Garus Tefila, you remove the entire plaster, Achihe Ba'aretz, all the way down to the ground. Now, that's to remove the tumah. How about to prevent tumah? So here, we don't have to be as strict. So, well, that's not totally true. According to the Tanakhama, you do have to be that strict. Break it into three pieces, have the plaster, remove the plaster all the way down to the ground. According to the Tanakhama, there's no difference between the removal of tumah and the prevention of tumah. And so basically, it's the non-oven, according to the Tanakhama. Rabbi Meir Omer Einot Tzarech Lo Ligros Atzvila V'Lo Achiyeh Ba'aretz Ela Mim'ato Mibifnei Me'arba Tfachim. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, for the prevention of tumah, so break the oven and only remove the top four tfachim of the oven. Okay. Period, adkan. With this in mind, so now it comes out that the removed tumah, we have in this version of the Mishnah of Kelim, we have now everyone being in agreement that you have to break it into three pieces and remove the entirety of the plaster. And so if anything now, this Mishnah is not an attack on Reish Lakish, but adrabah, it's a defense of Reish Lakish. Anytime you have any kind of strong connection between one piece and another, so that's considered halachically a chibur, and it's not considered as if it's broken. It's a good question. I don't know. No. Amar Mar Choko Lishlosha. So the Gemara says we divide it into three viriminu. So the Gemara, we're not done with our Mishnah in Kelim. We're going to be learning this morning one more Mishnah in Kelim. The Mishnah in Kelim over here, it's the first Mishnah of the fifth parak of Kelim. Tanur Tchilaso Arba. The Mishnah over here gives us the dimension of the minimum dimensions of an oven that's going to be halachically valid. and it's going to be an oven so that it's going to be mekabel tuma. So it's trilaso arba'a. It's got to be four tefachim. And v'shiyarav arba'a. Or let's say it was bigger than four tefachim, and basically we knocked it down, we broke it so that whatever's remaining is four tefachim. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's Shitas Rabbi Meir. V'chachamam omrim, b'amed v'amorim begadol. That's talking about a large oven of abekatan. But you know, they had small ovens back in the day. Tchilasa kol shehu. So, how big is this oven? It's nothing. Now, I know it's funny for a Mishnah to talk like that, right? Any amount is going to be considered an oven. Meaning, as we're going to see in just a moment, the kol shehu over here is a reference to a tefach. Okay, so yes, it is a little bit unusual for a Mishnah, which is there to give us linear measurements and to give us legal definitions, to say, a small kol shehu, any oven. Mishitigmar malachto shira berubo. And then once it's completed, if you have a majority remaining of that oven, now I say that oven, which is that oven? The one we just got done describing, the one that's a tefach, or are we going back to an original oven that was discussed in the Mishnah? A little bit unclear. That point will be clarified momentarily. V'kama kol shehu. Now, when we say that the small oven is a kol shehu, Amr de Rabbiyanai tefach shekein osten tanurin banos tefach. You know, the girls, when they would make their little play ovens, now back in the day, it's funny, their play ovens were not really play ovens, meaning they were ovens. It's just that, you know, for young girls. So back in the day, so their ovens were a tefach, so that therefore halachically registers as a valid oven. Now, Gemara is bothered. We are now talking about the remnants of an oven. Now, previously, we learned how do you destroy an oven? You got to crack it into three. Over here, what do we do in order to destroy an oven? In order so that it no longer qualifies as an oven? Well, what did we just learn? If it's got four tefachim of what it was originally, valid. Anything less than that, invalid. And the Gemara says, do those two Mishnahs agree? Doesn't seem that way. Now, taima de'ika shiar of dalet. Haleka shiar of dalet tahor. Now, if it's less than four tefachim, so seemingly it would be tahor. That would be the indication of that first Mishnah in the fifth perek of Kalim. However, earlier we learned this morning, when we went over the fifth perek, seventh Mishnah of Kalim, we learned that in order to break an oven, you have to break it into three. The two Mishnahs don't sound to be like they are coordinating. Amre, they said, meaning the yeshiva, the B'nai Yeshiva, comparing these two Mishnayos, so they gave the following approach. Hasam d'tzalke mitzalek, hacha d'avdei gistera. So the Gemara says it depends on what kind of break we're making. Are we making a break horizontally? Or are we making a break vertically? Rashi over here says, hacha d'kani beruba tame afagav d'lo have daled, that as long as I have the majority, but it's not four. So that's talking about where? Tzalke, where we went horizontally, along its base. In other words, the problem by going now along its base, by cutting it along its base, is that it's no longer to stand. It's not able to stand on its own. So there, if it's now less than four and it's not able to stand on its own, it's not a valid oven. Masha Enkain over here, when we're talking about breaking into three, we're talking about making vertical cuts in the oven. Vertical cuts in the oven where I guess the pieces could still somehow stand on their own. Meaning, again, a visualization over here would be tremendous. It really would be helpful for us to be able to really see this. In other words, I'm giving more of an abstract explanation of the Gemara, but if I'm making vertical cuts in the oven where it could still stand on its own, as long as I break it into three pieces where each piece does not represent a majority of the oven, so then and only then is it going to lose its status of being an oven. That's the yishuv between the steer between the two ovens. And then, as long as we're here, let's just quickly wrap it up. Amar Amar. Shiyarav berubo. Rubo letefach lamai. Now, that last line of that Mishnah in the fifth parak of Kalim, the first Mishnah, talked about the shiyarav is rubo. That as long as I have the majority of it, I need only a majority of it. Sorry. Which oven are we describing? Are we describing the girl's oven that's only a tefach? So the Gemara says, Lamai chaze. Well, if it's already only a tefach, and now I don't even have a tefach, the Gemara cannot entertain for a moment that this would be a valid oven. So I'm Rabbi Sheri Gadol Berubo. So the Gemara says, you misunderstood. That last line of the Mishnah was not qualifying the girl's oven. That last line of the Mishnah was talking about an adult oven, the adult size oven. So the Gemara says, but wait 1 second. We know what the dimensions are for an adult size oven. V'hamri Rabbanan arba'a, the Chachamim said 4. So what are you coming along and trying to give a new parameter of what is the remaining section of an adult size oven? The Mishnah already told us 4. Lokasha, habitanura bar tisha, habitanura bar shiva. So the Gemara says, the difference is, where do we start from? Did we start from 9 or did we start from 7? The way Rashi understands the Gemara's answer over here, it goes like this. If we started with 7, so now, the what would be a majority of 7? So a majority of 7 would be 4. So, you're basically taking an oven that once was 7, and now, if it's less than 4, but only less than 4, so consider. If it's less than 4, so it's still going to be a majority, but for anything less than 4 of an adult size oven is halachically disregarded. Masha'en kein, if it was 9, and now I knocked off half of it, right? Anything less than the majority of it. So now we're talking about an oven that is, the majority of 9 is 5. So now I knocked it down to, let's say, 4.3, 4.2. It's greater than 4, but at the same time, it's less than half of what it would originally was. So basically, we're learning 2 kulas together. One is that even though if it was 7 and I knocked off half of it, even though it is less than 4, so it's going to be still, I'm sorry, it's not going to be a valid oven. Mashenkin, if it was 9 and I knocked off, even though it's greater than 4, but it's less than half of what it originally was, so it's not going to be a valid oven anymore. That's the way to understand the end of that Mishnah over there in Kalim. Okay, I know we have a little bit more to go. We'll pause over here. So let's just quickly recap. We finished off a very long sugya today in terms of the destruction of a kli. We talked about trying the attempt to destroy a garment, leather garment, and that even of an oven. And various discussions in the Gemara. One, is there a gzera derabanan that we're not worried that the Chachamim were worried that we're not going to get to the majority? And so is there a gzera derabanan? Rav Nachman argues that there is a gzera derabanan. Two, a discussion in the Gemara about is there a distinction between cloth garment versus a leather garment? And by a cloth garment, we're not going to say that any connection is going to be a valid connection, but by a leather garment, according to Reish Lakish, any connection is going to be halachically a valid connection, a discussion within the Shita of Reish Lakish. And finally, as long as we're discussing all these Mishnahs and Kalim, a comparison of one Mishnah and Kalim to another Mishnah and Kalim regarding ovens and the Yishuv and various ways to try to bridge those two Mishnahs together.